Hi, and welcome to the Rachel Sellers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing free education about all things mental health. This podcast is about ending the mental health stigma and helping people cultivate a deeper awareness and understanding of themselves. Mental health education matters, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned and what I know. I'm your host, Rachel, and I'm so glad you're here. What's up, gang? We are back for another episode. I think I said this on the previous episode, but it really feels like it's been forever. If you listened to the episode before this, you know that my husband and I have a now 4.5-month-old golden retriever puppy, and he has been taking up a lot of my time. So the podcast has been recorded a little less frequently, but he is learning really quickly and currently enjoying a delicious frozen peanut butter and banana Kong, and he is occupied, so we are ready to roll. So today's episode is all about diet culture. Maybe you've heard this word before, maybe not. If you haven't, I'm kind of stoked that you haven't because I'm excited to teach you about it today. Diet culture is an important word, especially as it relates to eating disorders. So we're going to dive right in. So first, I'm going to unpack the word diet because the word itself can mean a lot of different things to different people. So the original meaning of the word, I did some digging on this, was actually used to represent a person's entire way of life. So it was used to refer to how a person was living, meaning what they were eating, drinking, how they were moving. Now, as we've progressed, the word can also be used to identify how a person eats. So we kind of have a more narrow definition now of what diet means. Some people follow a vegan or a vegetarian diet. The most common use of the word now in the 2000s, though, is referring to food restriction of either calories or of certain food groups to achieve weight loss. The diet industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, about 70-ish billion dollars a year, that profits off of us, meaning women, men too, are not excluded from this, off of people's insecurities in the name of so-called quote-unquote health, okay? Here's the thing though. Diet companies can be as glittery as they want and they can package and present who they are as non-diety as possible because the word, you know, is kind of getting out a little bit, honestly, about how harmful diets are and diet culture in general. But what we have to realize is that this industry and these companies are not about health at all, and they're about profit and about money. So many companies like Weight Watchers or Noom, and Lord have mercy, I could list a zillion others, okay? They claim to really care about people's health despite substantial and significant evidence that shows that diets don't work in the long term and actually can lead to worse health outcomes due to weight cycling, which is commonly referred to as yo-yo dieting. So this, I lose and then I gain and I lose and then I gain. That's called weight cycling, and it can be really damaging to a person's health. Dieting has a really long history, but it really blew up in 1998 when all of a sudden people became fatter overnight. Now, people didn't actually become fatter, okay? In 1998, the World Health Organization decided to lower the BMI, taking people who were really perfectly healthy and within a normal, quote-unquote normal range, and they put them in the overweight category. Super random, right? Well, if you look into why they made that change and who funded the change, the makers of a weight loss drug actually funded that change and they advocated for it. Why? Well, if more people were overweight, quote unquote, then the diet industry can make more money. Now, I'm going to pivot quickly and do a little briefing on the BMI because I mentioned it and I think it's important to speak to this and why it's a terrible measure for determining someone's health, okay? So we're going to do a brief history lesson and then I'm going to pivot back into explaining more about diet culture. But the BMI is relevant, okay, and it's connected. So the BMI, was created by a mathematician in 1832. And this dude designed it to measure general weights in different populations. And then in the 1900s, early 1900s, this dude, Ansel Keys, started using it to assess a person's individual health status, despite evidence to prove how flawed it was. Even the creator of this measure thought it was a bad measure. Like, he didn't think it was a good idea. And either one of these people did not think it should be used in this way to measure individual health. And really, it's sad, but insurance companies kind of latched onto it because it was easy to use and la, la, la. So it's interesting to me that the people who created the measure themselves were like, hey, we shouldn't use this to measure individual health status. There are so many things that are wrong with that, people. But one of those is this issue of validity. So when the BMI started being used to measure individual health status, it became an invalid measure because it was being used to measure individuals, even though the tool was created to measure populations. So essentially, the tool, the measure, it wasn't being used the way that it was designed to be used. And in the research world, if a measure is used in a way that it was not designed to be used, we would say that it is invalid. Another really big issue with the BMI is it was based on data from exclusively white men. And women and men have different bodies, okay? So generalizing these findings to even other genders, ages, or races also decreases its validity. What the BMI has done is it's created these arbitrary categories like underweight, overweight. It does not take into account a person's muscle mass or bone density, nor does it consider other factors that we know impact health, things like social economic status, access to healthcare, exercise, safe neighborhoods, trauma, sleep, or relationship with food. And those are just a few things that all influence someone's health. The BMI also stigmatizes and pathologizes people. Do you seriously think that labeling someone, calling someone obese, is going to encourage someone to engage in health-promoting behaviors? No, absolutely not. What it does is perpetuate shame, and it discourages people in fat bodies from seeking medical care, which is incredibly problematic, and I'm going to dive into that in a later episode of the podcast. But what I want you to know is that your BMI tells you nothing about your health. It's a flawed measure. It's invalid. It doesn't promote health, which is why I typically refer to the BMI as the bullshit measuring index. And, you know, I've thought about, do I cuss, do I not cuss on this podcast, to be honest, because I kind of tend to have a potty mouth, but I did it. I just said bullshit. So I guess I'll have to make this one explicit, huh? But that is how I refer to the BMI. It is the bullshit measuring index. It's a much more accurate term for the word. So that was a fun tangent, wasn't it? Okay, so let's get to the word culture. So we just talked a little bit about diet, history of dieting. Let's talk about culture. Culture is kind of a catch-all word, right? It encompasses so many things. What makes up a culture are things like social behaviors, beliefs, thoughts, feelings, values, stories, languages, systems, and attitudes. Culture is learned and it's passed down. So when we put those two words together and we think of what diet culture is a system of beliefs and values and attitudes that influence us to engage in certain dieting behaviors. Diet culture is and has historically been a very powerful force in shaping our relationship, not only with food, but with our bodies and with other people's bodies. So I have a woman crush on this girl named Christy Harrison. She is amazing and such an expert on this subject, okay? She wrote a book called Anti-Diet that is phenomenal. She is a badass non-diet and health at every size dietitian, and a force for so much good in this world. So I really like her definition of diet culture, and I'm going to read it to you. So she describes diet culture. There's four parts to her definition. First is that diet culture worships thinness and equates it to health and moral virtue, which means you can spend your whole life thinking you are completely broken just because you don't look like the thin, quote unquote, ideal. Okay, that's part one. Part two of her definition of diet culture and that it is that it promotes weight loss as a means of attaining higher status, which means that you feel compelled to spend a massive amount of time, energy, and money trying to shrink your body, even though the research is very clear that almost no one can sustain intentional weight loss for more than a few years. Let's also note that she is a dietitian who is telling us these things, okay? Third part of diet culture, it demonizes certain ways of eating while elevating others, making you obsessed with your eating patterns and ashamed of making certain food choices. And diet culture also oppresses people who doesn't match up with its supposed picture of health. And that disproportionately harms people who have marginalized identities, people in larger bodies, people of color, people with disabilities, which is very harmful to both mental and physical health. Diet culture is not really about food, okay? It's not really about eating at all. It's about how our culture has privileged certain identities, thin, small, white, able-bodied. It is about the biases and judgment that get just hurled at people in bigger bodies because of these beliefs that we have just taken and accepted as truth because it's such an ingrained part of our culture and we failed to call these things into question and to think critically about them. I would be silly if I didn't mention that diet culture is also rooted in racism and that fatness has historically been tied to blackness. And I am not going to dive into that because that could honestly be an entire podcast episode, but I did feel like I needed to mention it. If you are learning or interested in learning more about this, there is an amazing book that you need to read called Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia by the incredible Sabrina Strings. Amazing. Completely changed my perspective and deepened my understanding of this topic. So this internalization of this thin ideal of being obsessed with being thin, matching these beauty standards, blah, blah, has really messed with our heads, okay? We have bought into a set of beliefs that have interlaced our body shape and size with our worth and our lovability. If there was no thin ideal, if thinness wasn't privileged or worshipped or assigned to a higher status, I really don't think we would care. And we would actually be able to pivot and to think critically about these conversations about health and really start to think about the factors that influence health and stop equating thinness with health. Because it's reductionistic, it's wrong. Because the conversation about health is so much more than fitness and what you eat. If you want to learn more about that, I want you to Google something called social determinants of health. There is so much about the systems that we live in and the environment that impact our health. So I hope you can hear in my voice how passionate I am about this subject, and you might be wondering why. So I am an anti-diet activist because I work with clients recovering from eating disorders and body-shaming behaviors. And I was also a client in recovery myself. And my eating disorder began as a diet. And my story is not uncommon. I hear it every week from clients about how diet culture has harmed their self-esteem, their self-worth, their perception of themselves, and has led to incredibly harmful eating and exercise behaviors. And this isn't just my opinion. The best known environmental contributor to the development of eating disorders is the idealization of thinness. And this idealization of thinness, this obsession with thinness, comes from diet culture. And dieting is the most salient predictor of eating disorders in adolescents. And I work with a lot of teenagers in recovery, and I can tell you that I see this so, so much in my office. And it breaks my heart. And it is why I am so passionate about calling bullshit to so much of what we've learned about health and calling out diet culture, because I see the way it's harmed people every single day, every single week. Okay. So here's what I think is actually very ironic. I think that our obsession with thinness and so-called quote-unquote health is actually making us all sicker. It's leading to eating disorders and disordered eating. And that is why I am an anti-diet activist. It's why I speak up. It's why I risk being misunderstood, because it is pervasive and it's disgusting and it's harmful. So something that I hear a lot is, okay, you're anti-diet culture. So does that mean you just think, you know, you're anti-health, you just don't care about health? And the answer is no. And people who have this response are often missing the point. And I have a ton of compassion for those people. Maybe you are. Maybe you have been listening to this and you're like, man, she's promoting things that are not healthy. I have a lot of compassion for you, because I used to think that too. Diet culture is sneaky and it is manipulative. And being anti-diet does not mean that I'm anti-health. Okay, being pro-diet does mean that you're anti-health, actually, if we look at the research. What I promote and what I stand behind is intuitive eating, which rejects the diet mentality and it embraces an all foods fit approach. I think it's also important to say that being anti-diet does not mean that I'm anti-dieters, okay? This system of beliefs has been such a part of our conditioning. And I was 24 when I started questioning these things, because I also just took these diet culture messages and I just thought they were, you know, universal truths and truisms, because that's what I grew up hearing and that's what I thought was true about health. So being anti-diet doesn't mean I'm against people who diet. What it does mean is that I am against the culture and I am going to continue to speak out about the way that the culture is harmful. It means that I am anti-oppression and I am anti-discrimination based on the size and the shape of someone's body. So I don't usually get super personal on my podcast. It's usually pretty factual, huh? But I want to speak to how life as a diet culture dropout has given me incredible freedom and power and confidence. I can make food choices now that can be made freely without judgment or shame. The way that I move, the way that I exercise honors my body. It doesn't punish it, right? Because diet culture is, man, it has hijacked the fitness world, right? And we have cultivated and been influenced to have this very disordered and unhealthy relationship with exercise and use it as a way to compensate and earn and burn our food. Okay, that's not normal, people. Like, that's really messed up. And that is not what healthy movement is. Yet diet culture is like, oh, that's just normal, right? Like, burn off those calories, earn that brownie. How much do you hear it? You probably heard it this week, okay? That is not healthy. Movement and exercise should be a way of honoring the body, not punishing it. Life as a diet culture dropout has allowed me to have a more positive and healthful relationship with movement and to move intuitively. Being small is no longer my goal. And man, that is a metaphor for so much more than just my body size, okay? We were not designed on this planet. We were not put on this planet to stay small in both of our, in body and in mind. We deserve to take up space. We deserve to do something remarkable and meaningful with our one precious life. There's this quote that has always stuck out to me. It's in a book called Tuesdays with Maury. And the author writes, "The culture we have does not make people feel good about themselves. And you have to be strong enough to say, if the culture doesn't work, don't buy it." And nothing sums up my opinion about diet culture more than this quote, because diet culture doesn't work. It's made us sicker. It's made us less healthy. It has created oppression. It has perpetuated discrimination against people in larger bodies, and it just doesn't work. And so my call for us is to stop buying it. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you learned something new. Just a reminder that this podcast is about mental health and mental health concepts, and education about psychology and therapy is not a substitute for individual therapy.
If you want to help this podcast grow and get it into the hands of other listeners, please subscribe, rate, or leave me a review. It really does make a difference.